for you today. You know, I'm always going to try to bring to you information that is necessary, information that you need to know.
And what better information than to know about the people who are you're entrusting your heart, your soul, your lives, that of your family into to help make decisions for us. And with that in mind, we are welcoming Dr. Carolyn Evans-Shabazz to the show today. Welcome. Well,
thank you so very much. I'm very happy to be here.
You are welcome. Now, I gotta put this little plug in here. I met Dr. Shabazz, I'm going to say maybe about 3 years ago. She's a neighbor of my sister, but I have known her sister, Charlotte, I shouldn't say how long. I'm not going to say how long because we went to school at North Texas. I went to TWU. She went to North Texas State, but I was the first Miss Kappa Alpha Psi at North Texas State. And she was the second one. So that's how I met Charlotte. So, so that's how I met her. But I've known Kathy that long. My sister went to school with Kathy, so I know your whole family almost.
Yes.
But we wanted to bring Dr. Carolyn in today because she is the incumbent for Houston City Council District D.
Yay.
And Dr. Carolyn, kind of
where I live,
where Rebecca lives
in District D.
Yes,
I do too.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit because there's something very unique about you. But can you kind of tell us first, in case people are not sure, what areas and communities encompass District D?
Okay, I'm just going to kind of generally speak.
Yeah.
And thank you again for having
me. Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm going to start with Sagemont, South Park, Sunnyside, South Acres, South Union, Third Ward, Midtown, Medical Center. Did I say Sunnyside?
That's a big district. Yeah.
Oh.
That's a big district.
Definitely. And South Union.
Okay.
And so it's very big. About 200,000 plus constituents.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, now with that in mind, I want to ask you something. And this is something that I know of just in talking and knowing Charlotte. Okay. And that is that you grew up in your district.
I absolutely did. Yes.
Tell me what it was like kind of growing up and really watching that district change. It's changed a lot over the years.
It has absolutely changed a
lot. What was that like?
I was raised in Third Ward, Texas. And certainly it was, just like any other community, actually, because you don't know the difference.
Exactly.
Until you get a little older. But certainly I went to the public schools in Houston.
Okay.
And I also went, I went to Jack Yates High School.
You know, Jack Yates people are
historic,
always represented.
Historic.
You know that red. You got me, right? You got me.
Historic Jack Yates. Yes.
And then I graduated from Jack Yates and I went to Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Which coincidentally is the number one HBCU. And then I came back home and I went to the Texas Southern University, got a master's and a doctorate at Texas Southern University.
Okay.
And I'm really kind of unique because I actually went to TSU Nursery School.
Wow.
So a terminal degree at Texas Southern with a doctorate.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle. TSU.
And I lived just a couple of blocks from TSU, as you know. And so TSU was kind of like our playground.
Exactly.
We would go over there and go swimming and run around the track.
And you could hear the band practicing all the
time. Oh, God. The other night, I didn't think they were ever going to stop because homecoming was, coming.
That's right.
And they were jamming, okay? I mean, they were, and the thing is, where I live, where we live, really, with Kim, you can hear the music bouncing off of the school
and
across the street. And it almost feels like they are over across the street.
Yes, I thought it was just me.
And so that has been something that we have enjoyed, actually. It's never been a nuisance to me. I always wonder about the students. You know, what time are y'all going to stop playing?
Yes.
So that you can go home and study. Get ready for class,
The ones
but
in
other
the dorm.
Than that, it was always something that we enjoyed in the neighborhood.
Yes, always exciting because being around Texas Southern or being around a university at all, especially when you are a kid or in high school and middle school. That's exciting because the big kids are always there. But let me ask you this. Tell me a little bit about your family. You have a reputation of being a catalyst for change.
Yes.
So that didn't come out of nowhere. So tell me where that came from. Tell me a little bit about your family.
Well, actually, my dad was a basketball coach at Jack Yates High School for many years. But before that, my grandfather was the first president of Prairie View A&M University.
Oh, where we produce productive people.
Absolutely.
Where we produce productive people.
Absolutely.
I knew that was coming.
So that was the best slang and slogan they could have ever come
up with. That's true.
And whenever people tell me that, I say, oh, you?
That's
Prairie
true.
View.
Yeah.
And my mother was a first grade teacher.
Okay.
And so, you know, you being an educator, you know, really, I mean, you're a public servant.
Oh gosh!
For all that you do,
oh my gosh,
for your students,
absolutely,
and out of the classroom.
Wait a minute, yes. Was Principal Evans your grandfather?
Well, he was the president.
You were president.
Now, actually, he was also the first African American veterinarian in the state of Texas. And then, now I don't know how they transitioned that, but he went from president to principal.
Yeah.
And then to president, the first president.
So Evans Hall was named after him?
After my grandmother.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. And then you went back to TSU?
Well, you know, gas.
That's true.
I could walk.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
You know, I could do my papers. At my class would be at 5 and I could print them out at 4:45.
Ink would and be there.
Be
that's
and
right.
And get to class on time. So that made a tremendous difference.
That is so interesting.
Wow. So basically, you had pretty large shoes to fill. Your family members had pretty large shoes to fill.
I always say that.
Yeah.
You know, they did have a reputation and a legacy, but I didn't depend on it to the point that I didn't feel like I needed to do my own service and create my own path.
Exactly.
And, you know, I have a lot of things that I can say that I'm like my mother with this. I'm like my father with that. But I think that between the two of them, I developed compassion for people and being able to communicate and work with all walks of life.
Right.
You know, I don't care how old you are or how seasoned you are. I have a great deal of respect for people, period. And I love people. And I believe, you know, that spirit came from them. And so, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be a blessing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Now, when did you decide? So you're by craft and vocation, you're an educator.
I am.
Yes. And when did you decide really and kind of look around and see some of the things, not just in your district, but in Houston, that needed some change? And you said, you know what? The time is now.
Well, I'm actually a retired educator.
Yes.
I was a diagnostician, a test special ed children, which also you have to have a lot of patience.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Yes.
I helped a lot of people, young people graduate.
Wow.
And then when I retired, I always say I didn't have sense enough to go sit down.
Yes.
And I became more active in the community. And I commend you because a lot of times when you are teaching, you kind of stay in your own little bubble and you don't really go out, you don't, you know, and do things.
Really
so you're taking advantage of a wonderful opportunity to just kind of expand while you are teaching. I always tell young people, if I was as politically aware now as I was then, or as you are, I probably could have been the first vice president, female vice president of the United States. They have no ceiling.
That's right.
And they can certainly achieve that which they want to achieve. But again, I became very active with the NAACP.
Okay.
And I was on the executive committee. And I was the chairman of the education committee. I mean, go figure, right?
Yeah.
And so consequently, I spent a lot of time trying to bring equity to the school district.
Okay.
And of course, I would travel to surrounding districts, but mostly the engagement was with the Houston Independent School District.
Where we work.
But now, was that in
That's a whole nother
Was that
show.
In, yeah, that, well... Careful. Don't touch on it. If we this one always wants to go there. I have to hurry in sometimes, that's okay. But you said something very interesting in your capacity with the NAACP. In that capacity, you got a chance to kind of travel and see what else was out there and how other people were doing things.
I absolutely did. Yeah. And, you know, the biggest thing that I stood with my community mm-hmm. was school closures. It became quite commonplace that they were closing the schools in the minority neighborhood.
That's what I was going to say.
And so I developed a lot of relationships with a lot of people who were out mm-hmm. there being active as well. I remember, I think one of the last engagements I had and in that capacity was trying to keep Jones High School as a comprehensive high school.
Right.
Which, yes. you know, we didn't get a lot of, I'll say, success.
Right.
But we did speak our minds and let people know that we thought that those things that they were doing to our community were totally unacceptable.
Right.
And so if nothing else, we came together as a community and we were able to at least voice our concerns with those that were the powers that be, so to speak.
Exactly. Now, when you've had a chance to witness, you've had a lot of engagement and experience in witnessing what's going on in the school districts. And this is just a question that I'm asking because I would like to know the answer to. When they close schools like that, do they have a really good sound plan in mind as to where those students are going to go?
Because pulling some stuff out, you know, where
is it always a financial thing?
That's what they say.
Yeah.
But I look at the impact that closing a school has on the community.
Absolutely.
You know, one of my first fights was actually about the school across the street from where I live.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Turner yes. Lockhart yes. is what I call it.
Yes.
Certainly, I did attend Turner Elementary, and it became a time when they started switching the buildings. They put all of the students over at Lockhart, and then they put all of the students back at Turner.
So something was brewing.
And then they decided that they were going to move all of the students back to Lockhart. They were going to tear down Turner, and then they were going to rebuild Turner, and they were going to bring all of the students back.
And it was going to be called Turner.
It was going to be called Turner.
It sure was. I remember
and
that.
And certainly maybe even Turner Lockhart.
Yes.
But when it got back to its actual location, which originally was the Turner
Absolutely.
Location, there was some pushback that made the name turn out to be Lockhart.
Right.
That really sticks here because I'm going to tell you, Mr. Turner was actually an educator. Reverend Turner actually was an educator. He actually was one of the founders of Pilgrim Church, which is right there on Blodgett.
Right.
Well, if you know anything about the administration at Turner, there was a wonderful, phenomenal principal named Ruby L. Thompson.
Yes.
Mrs. Ruby L. Thompson encouraged all of her teachers. And I think all of the teachers that I recall went into administration.
Right.
And so when they came to her to tell her that they wanted, because the school was kind of overflowing with kids, they wanted to move the kids to where Lockhart is located, which was actually a Jewish community center.
Yes.
And so then she was adamantly opposed to that.
Wow.
And so to appease her, they named the school after her dad.
Okay.
So the Ruby L, the L is for Lockhart.
Right.
And so, of course, the division of the community was like straight up Burkett.
Right.
Where you could play with kids in the evening, but the ones on the east side went to Lockhart.
Yes.
And those on the west side went to Turner.
Turner,
and
yes.
they were very competitive. And I mean, I always tell people that I was so blessed to come up during those times because the teachers were excellent.
And they stayed at schools.
They stayed at schools. And then kind of ironically, my own aunt, my mother's sister, was my third grade teacher. And so, which was really always funny because her name was Miss Klein, right?
Yes.
But I mean, at home, she was Aunt Orleans.
Right.
Right.
I taught my niece too.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I would wait for the, I wouldn't call her name at all because right. I couldn't grasp calling her
right.
when she was crying, right? And when the bell would ring, Aunt Orleans,
yes.
Aunt Orleans, then I could have a,
yes.
a conversation.
Yes.
But she showed no favoritism.
Right. Of course she did.
When she whipped couldn't. One, she whipped us all. She'd go down the row.
That's
and,
right.
And pop us all on
That's
the
right.
leg, right? But I mean, phenomenal teachers. And people say, do you remember your teachers? I say, I remember each and every one of them.
Yes.
And then I went on to Miller Junior High School, which is now the Young Women's College
okay.
Prep.
Okay, that was a junior high school?
That was a junior
that
high school.
That was a big school for
that
a junior high school.
That was seventh, eighth, and ninth when they had education the way it should be.
Exactly.
You know, one
yes.
through six should
yes.
be elementary.
That's right.
And
that's
I still
what,
think
right.
it should be
me.
Seventh,
yeah,
eighth,
sixth
eighth and ninth.
Yes.
Because I think they throw the sixth graders into an environment too early.
Right.
And then they certainly throw the ninth graders
oh, yeah.
into an
oh,
environment
yeah. they do.
Too early.
They do.
And so then, for some strange reason, I guess because my dad worked at Yates,
right.
my parents didn't want me to go to Yates. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've been waiting to put on that chill.
Yes, yes.
Oh, come on now.
Yes.
So initially, they sent me to Mount Carmel High School, which is a Catholic school, which was right off of McCowan and Belfast.
Right. Now it's a charter.
I went to St. Agnes.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, God. I was just devastated.
Yeah.
I mean, they had the seal in the floor.
That's right.
And they
That's
would
right.
tell you not to walk on it. Because
yeah.
that was just disrespectful. I walked on it every day because
yeah,
I wanted the, whoever to feel like they needed to put me out so I could
go back to Yates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then eventually I did. That January, they heard my cries.
Yes.
I had some older friends in the neighborhood who actually
right.
went to Mount Carmel, but they were like two grades ahead. I said, they're
right.
getting ready to graduate.
Right.
I don't
right.
want to be there. Even
yeah.
though I had, you know, developed some really good friendships.
Yeah.
But I was trying to get to JY. I mean, JY for
yeah.
And so I got to Yates and immediately the cheerleader sponsor let me wear my older cousin's cheerleader uniform. Her name was Pat. So
okay.
I had this cheerleader sweater that had Pat on the front, right? Until I could order my own
right.
sweater.
Right.
But I was in heaven at Jack Yates.
So what you're saying is that where a lot of people probably would have, and I remember, you know, around this time, you got a lot of people rallying. That's when people were rallying to get out of the hood. A lot of people wanted to get out of the hood.
Oh, yeah.
But,
no.
but you were, but you know,
I
people
was like,
were.
You got to yeah. be kidding. I've been going to public school
yeah.
all my life.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to put me over there?
Yeah.
I don't
right.
want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, I had a ball.
You sound like my sister Kim. Yes,
I had a
yes.
ball. I mean,
yes.
I love the community.
Kim didn't
I loved
go to
the, I've always
school.
Loved the neighborhood,
yeah.
the community. My older brother went to
right.
Yates. And in fact,
right.
the funny thing, we always joke, all of us graduated from Yates with the exception of Kathy. She
went to Lamar, didn't she?
but I still think that the feeling that you have for Jack Yates cannot be, you can't compare. With some of the other
it's
schools.
An icon yes
it's very different
yes.
and I'm not saying I mean maybe Wheatley and Worthing and those schools feel
yeah,
the same
I was
that's right that's right
yes
yes,
yes. And I guess what I'm saying is to graduate from a black high school
yes
is what I'm saying
that's
not,
right
I mean people that went to Worthing love Worthing I
yes.
actually worked at Worthing
yes
for over 10 years I was
yeah.
a diag over there I worked
right.
at Carnegie Attucks
right
and schools in the Sunnyside area so
right.
I became very familiar with the people that live there
yeah
and just I just love people that's all it is but
yeah.
I felt more comfortable being in an environment with my own people
right
and
you
that's
know.
Very rare for people to say because most of the time
really
I, yeah you'd be surprised how many people say no
they don't want to be around the people Rebecca
well yeah. I'm gonna tell you you want to hear a real story of course you know I'm fair skinned right
uh-huh.
and so I always had to fight. You know, because people felt because you were light-skinned,
right.
you weren't black enough.
Right.
You know,
colorism.
until they were getting a conversation with me, and they like, this
just
is
like
a
us.
Sister.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I tell them, I'm off the third ward. I'm on the third ward.
Right.
Jack Yates High School patio.
Yes.
So,
yes.
so don't think. Don't let
exactly.
the smooth taste fool
exactly.
you, right?
Exactly.
But anyway,
exactly.
I love the community and just being able to just navigate around those spaces
yeah.
was just heaven for me.
Well, you know, as a career educator, do you think it's important? And this is, this is a slippery slope. And I'm saying that because I sit in this seat myself as a teacher in a public school.
We both do.
We can't, but I started out, and I'm not going to say I started out, but I've also had the charter school experience.
We both
so yeah, we both have. Mm-hmm. Do you think as a career educator that it's important for communities to support public schools?
I absolutely support public schools. And I'm going to tell you, I had an experience working at a charter school as a diagnostician.
Right.
Some of those schools I wouldn't consider sending one of my pets.
Wow.
Too, because it just was out of order. I mean, the disciplinary measures.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And I just did. Yes. I mean, not to say that there are no good charter schools. I think they've come a long way.
Right.
And some of them are great. So I want. I don't want to say because I feel that if you're providing a good education, then, you know, that's I'm behind you.
Right.
But for the most part, I believe, you know, we're using public dollars.
Right.
And I believe that we need to undergird our public schools.
Yes.
And then the traditions that you have in some of these public schools cannot be duplicated.
They can't.
And so I really, really push for public education. And of course, you know, being the education chair of the NAACP, I engage with the board a lot regarding public schools and providing public education. But I am so education oriented.
Right.
And I'm going to say this, you know, before we move forward, some people, you know, I was the first African-American female chairman of the board at the Houston Community College.
Okay.
I was appointed in like 2015 and became, I think I was the secretary.
Okay.
And then moved on up vice president. And then I became the board chair.
Right.
And I became so indoctrinated to the value of trades.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. Because, you know, when I was coming through Jack Yates, we had like a vocational role.
Yes.
You know, where we had cleaning and pressing.
Yes.
We had
cosmetology.
Yes. We had print shop.
That's right.
We had auto mechanics.
Wood shop. Yes.
Wood shop. We had sewing, all of this. We had all of those things.
That's right.
And so at one point, then they decided to take those out of the school.
I remember when that happened.
I kind of wondered. I mean, we were very successful coming out of high school where you didn't necessarily have to go and get a college degree.
And you could be successful. You could have a career.
So I'm wondering, was that calculated?
Somebody that's of very high importance that made a comment that kind of just got my gears twisted.
What was that, Rebecca?
And the comment was, I'm so tired of graduating welders and hairdressers.
You better stop, because let me tell you something. let me just handle it.
Wow.
First and foremost, that is such a ridiculous comment. I mean, I got all of this degree stuff, and of course I needed it to be able to move up the educational arena.
Right.
But basically, you can graduate from college with all of that and you don't have a job.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
right. I have a job.
Plus, you can't demand the salary
that
you can demand with these trades.
That's right.
People that go into trades, they can basically decide what they're going to make.
And open
their own entrepreneurs.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. They can own their own businesses.
Yes.
Because I'm going to tell you what, I had to take my car to the shop today. I can't fix my car.
That's right. Right.
Okay?
That's right.
If this air goes out in here, I'm going to be out the door.
That's right.
Because there's nothing I can do.
That's right.
Except maybe try to adjust the thermostat.
Right.
But other than that, and it just became very, very disturbing to me, those kind of comments. And I'm going to say this. Whenever I get the opportunity to speak, especially to parents, I tell them and I beg them and I ask them, never tell your child he's not college material. That is so defeating to them from the very onset, because you're telling them they're not good enough from the very beginning.
Yes.
Please don't tell your children that.
That's right.
To me, college is anything past high school that helps you to get gainful employment, be it a trade with credentials or be it a degree.
Or the military.
Yeah. But don't tell them they're not college material. And a lot of people said they heard that.
But ladies, let me say this to you. And I'm gonna say this because I have a personal experience with that. I'm in a large a large ISD here in the Houston area. And I taught at that school, loved that school. We had been in a position where we were on the verge of being reconstituted. In that 1 year, the principal moved that school completely up to where it was a B-rated school. However, it was already on the chopping block to be reconstituted. So all of us had to go in and interview for our jobs again. Okay, so we all know that routine, how that goes. Yeah. So when I went in to interview for my job, they asked me this: do you believe that all students should be college bound? I said, absolutely not. And I said that because I started out in a life skills classroom. Wow. I knew that some of my school, my students that I had to carry and I had to change them. I knew many of those students were not going to be college bound, but it was my charge as a teacher to get that student to where they were operating at the very pinnacle of their ability.
Absolutely.
That was my charge.
Absolutely.
So when I said that, and at that point, this particular district was a college-bound culture. Mm-hmm. And when you put students in a box like that, you really are hindering them. I know that every student won't be college bound, but that doesn't mean that they should not be able to be pushed and catapulted to their absolute level of success, whatever
that
might be.
On the flip side of that, you have children who are college bound material, but have no desire to go to college.
They want entrepreneurship.
Yeah, they want entrepreneurship. They want to be their own boss. One of the girls that's in my class right now, smart, straight A student. The girl is brilliant. And you know what she told me? She wants to open up her own beauty salon and nail salon one day.
And thank you. Look how beautiful your nails are. Right? Okay.
Don't look at mine.
I think that we lost a generation.
Yeah.
Because when I graduated, a lot of the guys went to Hughes Tools and some of these big companies.
Steel companies. They made
bank.
That's right.
Okay,
right.
So
that's
now
right.
They're sitting on big fat retirements.
Yeah.
And pensions.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
That absolutely keeps them in a good lifestyle, right?
Right.
But sometimes pushing people into an environment that they don't really want.
That's right.
Or they may just like being an auto mechanic.
Right.
They,
and that's,
they just
that's
want
okay.
to be
that's
a
right.
beautician. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely
but
nothing.
But because we pushed everybody to college,
right.
they lost the desire. Some of them lost the desire to do anything.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
that's what we're recovering from now.
Trying to
recover from now. Because I value people. I value what they bring to the table.
Right.
And I do know that you do better in vocations that you love.
That you love. It's like
that
not
you don't
going
have
to
a
work.
Problem getting up in the middle of the,
right.
in the morning to get to work.
And
I mean, that's like me. I love what I do now.
Right.
Yes.
And that's why that was another thing for me. Not only I've known people that I went to Prairie View with that are in vocations now. These
Absolutely.
People have bachelor's and sometimes master's
degrees. Yes.
And they
elected
own,
to do something. That's
yeah,
right.
They own mechanic shops.
Well,
they
I'm a licensed real estate broker.
Yeah.
I went back and got that at the Houston Community College.
Yeah.
You know, because I think in these times we have to be more than prepared.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I got this, like, you know, I just said, you know, I'm glad I got the degree and all of that.
Yeah.
But I see the value. And also, you don't have all those student loans.
Right. Yeah.
When
yeah.
you go
and
get
a whole bunch of debt.
And
that's
then
right.
if you want to do that, you can get the trade, make the money, and then go back
that's
to
right.
school and pay for your education. As
that's
opposed
right.
to waiting on Joe Biden to,
that's right. that's
yeah.
right.
To forgive you. To take away our student
yeah,
loans,
waiting
right?
with bated breath. I want to yeah. recognize some of the people who have tuned in. Hey, Kim. Hey, Charlotte.
Hey, Charlotte
says, hey, hey, Kathy. And Paulette says, yes, Paulette.
My sister.
Yes. Paulette says, President Evans was my president at Prairie View.
Yeah.
1960 to 1964.
Wow.
He held Prairie View to high standards and was a great leader and student advocate.
And I'm trying
awesome.
To be that way too. I'm trying to be that.
And we have got Isaac Aguilla. Isaac, hey, Isaac. Isaac says, council member from the District of Destination. Awesome.
Thank you.
And Kathy says, I'm very proud of my sister.
Aww.
Yes. And then they're talking to each other. And Yamika says, blessings, ladies.
Thank you.
Now, we're on the education thing. I've got to revert back to this, because this is something I really wanted to ask you. What do you think it's going to, well, we all know exactly where the largest district in Houston, in Texas, the position that they're in right now, and it didn't happen overnight. Okay. With this in mind, it doesn't matter where it is right now, but with this in mind, what are the steps that you think that we could take to avoid ending up in that situation again once this has run its course?
I think it sounds very cliche.
Yeah.
Because people just really haven't grasped. We have to start voting.
Yes.
In different leadership.
Absolutely.
Because all of this came from
up at the top.
The governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All of it came from the top.
Yes.
He, of course, is the person that appointed Mike Morath.
Yes.
And then there's a big push for vouchers.
Of course.
Yes.
And so this is how you start destroying
public education. Right.
And so when you start doing all of these different measures to destroy, then your mission is accomplished.
Right.
You know, but I've had conversations with teachers.
Right.
I am so thankful that I am not teaching
in the classroom
at the Houston Independent School District. Now, I wasn't going to call the name. Oh,
but
well,
yeah,
I can.
You know.
I retired. They give me a check.
Y'all heard how she said it. She retired.
I retired. They send me a check not to come to work. Right. And so, you know, my sister Kathy works in Galena Park.
Right.
I don't hear any
complaints
of the complaints.
Wow.
No complaints.
That's nice.
About what they're going
That's
through.
Nice.
And so the deal is, I think this is all by design. You are trying to destroy the biggest
public institution.
And here's what I've said, and I've been preaching, and of course you know this. This is punishment. This is the governor punishing. I'm sorry. The crystal just came out. It's punishing because there is no Republicans that are sitting in office from the mayor down to the commissioner's court. So, and this city is 97% Democrat,
right?
So, what can I do in order to infiltrate that? Well, I can't infiltrate the city council. That's locked up.
Right.
I can't infiltrate the courts because that's a done deal. So what do I have power and control of? The school board.
You're so on point. I mean, Harris County is blue.
Yeah.
And so we want to destroy the blue.
Right.
But what is your thought when it comes to you destroying the blue children?
Right.
You know, so when do we decide that it's not about politics, it's about people?
Well, you have to care about people.
Absolutely.
So when you don't care about people, the only thing you care about is politics, because politics gives you power.
Okay. I want Councilmember Shabazz to explain this to me, because I know a lot of people asked me this prior to the show. Can you explain what that voucher system actually is? What does that mean?
They give you a voucher for a certain amount.
Right.
You know, across the board.
Exactly.
And then you use it to choose the school that you want to go to.
So
but the problem is this. Some of these schools cost more.
Exactly.
Than these vouchers.
That's my point.
Which certainly means that those that don't really need them can use them and just supplement themselves, and then they pay the rest.
Right.
Those that do need them, if they don't get scholarships or they don't have any way to pay the difference, then they're not going to go to the best schools that are available.
And so that means, and that was my point. That was my point, because let's say that the voucher is worth $10,000, but the school is $21,000 to attend.
Absolutely.
So that voucher is worthless to 80% of the people over in Denver Harbor.
Because they're going to have to take that $10,000 voucher and find a school that will accept that $10,000 voucher. Which Whereas is those who probably have their kids already in private school and already paying the $21K,
that's
they're okay with it. So, but it's like, oh, this is, you know, money I can add to my, you know, my bank account and not have to pay. You know, as you know, I can now pay the $11,000 and not the $21,000.
Right.
But either way, they can still access the best schools.
Right.
Okay. And so that's a problem. That's why public education needs to be equitable. It needs to be undergirded and made to be the best educational institutions like they used to be. You graduated from Wheatley, Worthen, Yates, Jones.
That was saying
you
something.
You could compete with
anybody. That's right.
But now they've been watered down, and then with all of this NES or whatever it is, just unbelievable. I know.
Talk about it.
Let me tell you this. You know, I still keep my eye on the education.
Absolutely.
Piece.
Of course you
natural.
Do.
I have a natural inclination.
Right.
And, you know, I read this about not being able to close your door and teach, which was supposed to be a way, I guess, that they could walk in and out on you all day. And whatever, which teachers are in the room teaching, you know what I'm saying? Right. But, you know, I'm going to tell you, God works in mysterious
ways.
Amen.
Yes.
And amen. Why did a fire inspector reach out to me and tell me that that was a violation
of the fire code
for them to open those doors?
Right.
So I looked at it. I said, what are you talking about? So what I did, I called the mayor.
Right.
Okay. I said, Mayor, this is the information I have from a certified fireman, fire inspector. He called Chief Pena.
Yeah, he's the fire inspector for NRG.
He called Chief Pena, who is the fire chief.
That's right.
And I mean, immediately the fire chief contacted HISD and they started having these meetings.
That's right.
And just from a person trusting me with the information and me moving forward
with that
changed that policy, because I wouldn't have known. I don't always have to be the smartest one in the room, but I have to be smart enough to listen to those that have expertise in whatever area. And so I was able to get that information to the mayor to the fire chief to the, and he was still pushing back at first.
I can imagine.
But now I think it's, you can close the doors if they have a sprinkler system.
Exactly.
No, you can open the doors if they have a sprinkler system.
Yes. But
because they have a firewall or something that if you leave those doors open, the fire can spread very rapidly.
Well, you know.
And so that was a good thing. But I'm just saying, I'm hearing so many things. People are getting fired on the spot for challenging what's going on.
Well,
principals are getting removed because they've chosen not to do NES schools.
Yes.
This is a, I can't imagine the kind of power that the superintendent has. But guess what? There's no accountability because now your elected trustees were removed.
Right.
And they would at least have to deal with their constituents and serve them. Whereas now the board of managers, they don't have that.
Well, let me say this. Kim went down to one of the meetings, you know, because there was a slate of meetings that happened all the way up, I believe, until last week, where you could go in and meet your school board and ask questions or raise concerns and get information. And she said, as her neighbor, she saw you down at the meeting and she described to me something that I couldn't believe.
I was
now,
there.
I don't want to say it. I want you to tell me what happened.
I was there and I saw it. It became total chaos. Total chaos. Nothing was accomplished in that meeting.
And no questions were answered.
No questions were answered. They started out talking. And then there was this group. Oh, they were really, really off the chain. They had cards and they stepped out to have, they had a message on the card.
Right.
I can't even remember what it said. But one stepped out from the left side of the room. They stepped back. Somebody came from the back of the room. Eventually, it was total total chaos.
Wow.
Total chaos. There was nothing accomplished at that meeting because people are very, very angry that you have taken over their school system. I mean, I understand the law and how it happened and whatever, but I do think that there could have been some discretion. But the people are very incensed.
And you would, if I'm a taxpayer and my tax dollars are going,
the biggest portion of your tax dollars.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would be upset too because I'm paying you.
You are a taxpayer.
I am.
Yeah. Look at your check and see what
in that community.
In
right?
that community.
Absolutely.
So I can understand why the community is incensed because you're making decisions with my tax dollars that I don't approve.
And
of.
You have no accountability exactly. to me at all.
Exactly.
And that's a major problem. Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm on the childhood committee with the city of Houston.
Right.
So I still, you know, engage mostly with after school programs and things of that nature.
Right.
But seeing what's going on during the day is appalling for what our students are having to deal with. And teachers, they have to be angels. I mean, absolute angels. You know, I'm going to tell you, I had no intentions of going into education. Right?
Yeah, me either.
No, me either. I saw me my either. Mama and my daddy, and me. It wasn't at That's all right. like it is now.
Me neither.
And then you want the truth? You want the ugly truth? Or,
I can take the lie. Ugly truth. Okay. I can take it.
I thought it was just going and being off in the summer.
Right.
That was a big deal for me. I could go and do my job. And in the summer, I could be footloose and fancy free. I didn't realize that is one of the hardest. One of the hardest jobs that anybody can have.
Yeah.
Because you got to deal with all of these little personalities.
Yeah.
And especially, I taught middle school, right?
Reading, us too.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Where the kids are caught up. I taught reading, writing, computer literacy. And we're not going to talk about them taking the libraries out. But, you know, it was just unbelievable to me, the things that people, you know, that the teachers are going through now.
Right. Absolutely.
And then I'm going to tell you, back in the day when I was teaching, we could paddle. All we needed Ooh. Was a witness. And right. you couldn't go in and just, you know, beat somebody's child.
Right. Yeah.
But I got the feeling after a while that some of those kids like to get paddled. But I didn't have a lot of discipline problems. And I think it was the threat of it.
Well, you know,
when it changed, changed when the white teachers came to the black schools and the black teachers went to the white schools.
And the black teachers were not paddling their children.
And the white parents did not want the black teachers to whoop their children and vice versa.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh, goodness. You know, and I don't believe in brutalizing. I believe in talking, as long as you can talk. But after a time, something has to happen. And so, you know, and I said I wasn't going to talk about this. But this library stuff, being a former English teacher blew me away. I was actually at the mayor's press conference talking about that. It's just unbelievable. First of all, what message are you giving that you're sending students to the library for disciplinary measures? I mean, just that right there alone is poor messaging.
Let me throw this out here. And I had to explain this to my sister. She didn't even realize this, but until this year, Rebecca, at your school, I believe, and we don't call any school names, but I have not been at a school in the last 7 years where there was even a librarian on staff or a library.
See, that's a problem.
See, you, that's what
but
I mean.
Guess what? What do they constantly talk about? The reading
literacy.
Level.
That's right.
Literacy
that's right.
is so low.
That's right.
But you...
And I think
you know, they say like when you go to church, they say if you support the church, you'll see it in your checkbook.
Right.
They don't support...
Well, and here's their, I think here, this is what they were saying, but then you've got to walk that back a few steps. They're saying that because so much information is gained through technology now that we don't need libraries and books anymore. However, you need to teach children how to research even on technology.
I was an English teacher.
Yes.
I cannot describe to you how my students reacted when Mrs. Margaret Hutchins, who was the librarian at Fleming Middle School, I taught in Fifth Ward.
Right.
When she would take them around that library and teach them,
right,
you know, how to research,
right,
you know, using the system to find your books. Now, I understand that now, you know, you can Google or whatever, whatever, but that is a lost art.
Yeah, that's
being
right.
To be able to navigate
using
your way
that
through a
decibel system.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And then, you know, then you go through and you look at the different books and you're like, oh, I think I could be interested in that. She would give them books.
Exactly.
That they would express an interest in, you know, whatever. And she would give it to them. You're not going to necessarily get that through technology.
Right.
You're not going to get that hands-on people experience.
Even when you are researching, you still have to go to the library, especially when
that's
for,
right.
For the ones that's, you know, that are going to college. You are still expected to go to the library, even in college, to do research.
That's right.
Well, do you know the? I'm sorry to disturb you.
No,
I get so passionate about this. But you even need to be on a ninth grade reading level to take a trade, and to be successful.
Right, right.
You it's not like you don't have to know how to read. You know, you have manuals that you have to read.
Yeah.
And different things.
That's right.
But my first meeting with the superintendent was at Jacket's High School, mm-hmm. and the first thing he told me was about the reading levels and this and that. I said, well, sir, I said, if you're concerned about that, are you concerned about the resources that
right.
you're putting into these schools
right.
that are helping our students? Because we are smart.
Right.
We are smart, resourceful right. people.
Absolutely.
If you give us what we need to level the playing field,
hello.
We will excel.
Equity.
Okay.
What is that? What is so hard about that? Equity.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm again going to say this. When I graduated from Jack Yates High School,
yes.
my class and the classes, you know, preceding me could compete with anybody. And the classes behind me, too, up to a certain time. But they could compete with anybody.
Yes. You know what? I taught second and third grade briefly. That's how I knew elementary wasn't for me, Lord.
I know that's right.
So I briefly taught second and third grade. One of the first questions I asked my classes, those couple of years that I taught, I asked them, I said, how many of your parents read to you at home? One child.
Mm-hmm.
And in my 2 years of doing it, four children total.
Yeah.
So, and it's not because the parents are not interested. You got parents that's working 3, 4, and 5 ooh, jobs. Ooh. You got parents that's trying
girl,
to make sure.
Don't be hitting on me.
You got parents that's trying to make sure bills are paid. They trying to make sure food is on the table. They're trying to make sure they have enough just to make sure that their children are necessities and sustenances are met. So, if and then
I'm chopping at the bit.
So if there was a study done from Harvard University that says, well, if you don't read to your children from 0 to 6, you probably have lost them along the way as far as their reading skills, their phonics level, and all of that. So what about the parents who
wait a second? Now keep that in mind because we want to hit on something here.
So here we go. You got three educators here.
Rebecca, while I'm doing this, take a look at some of these comments coming through. Council Member Shabazz, you have made a conscious decision to stay in the community where you grew up. And we've all seen the Central Houston area change dramatically within the past 15 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it's possible to strike a balance between preserving the historic integrity of District D and embracing the diversity that's presenting itself real time?
I absolutely believe that you can strike a balance. Of course, recently there was a push to make parts of Third Ward a historic district,
okay,
which was not accepted or acceptable to some of the people in the community. But the reason being is because there were some financial ramifications involved. If you
right.
wanted to do something with your house and you didn't do it in a certain manner,
that's right.
Then you would be
in violation.
But I think that just we have a natural inclination to preserve.
Right.
I am so very honored that on tomorrow, actually, I'm going to the El Dorado Ballroom.
Oh,
that
has been it's restored. Beautiful.
And I'm telling you, and I remember my parents used to go there and shake a tail feather.
Tell me about concerts that used to be there.
They used to shake a tail feather. Then one of my cousins, Booker T. Caldwell, which is Kirby John's dad, had a tailor shop there.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's beautiful. I was one of those people when they got ready to rebuild Jack Yates, I was not in favor. And the deal is people look at new and they think, oh, new is better. Where I look at the San Jacinto campus, which is the HCC, formerly San Jacinto High School, that building is beautiful.
It is.
And what I wanted to do was make Jack Yates, because it was so big, I wanted them to restore it.
Yeah.
I also wanted them to make it a junior senior high school.
Okay.
And then that way we would have had a feeder pattern that was built
right there.
If the students went to Jack Yates Junior High, like back in the way back in the day, and they did well, parents were not going to move their kids.
That's right.
But now we have kids being bused, which is a whole other story.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So you tired when you get there.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're tired? You act out.
Or you sleep in class. Yeah.
You sleep or you act out. And so I don't, this system really needs to change. But I'm trying to think, it was something you said. I was ready to jump in. Oh, I know what it is. And I'm going to say this. It's very, very important that people make a good minimum wage.
Yeah.
You know, when I first ran in 2019, they were pushing for $15 an hour, which, okay, but it's still not enough.
It's not.
And now, dealing with the unions and whatever, they're looking at $19 an hour. But the important part of that is if you can make a decent wage, you don't have to get 2 and 3 jobs.
Right.
Because now, if you have to work 2 and 3 jobs, then who's keeping your kids?
Yeah.
You know, and the time from 3 o'clock on till the parent gets home is a very crucial time.
Absolutely.
For students.
That's when trouble can start.
And so, how important is it to see your parent come to your game or to see your parent come to your classroom? That's so important.
Right.
So our family structure depends on raising these minimum wages to where people don't have to have these 2 and 3 jobs. It's just, and you know, I understand that small businesses may not be able to, you know, pay maybe more than $19 an hour, but you're making, some of these major companies are really
making the money. That's what I said. It's not the small businesses that's the problem.
No,
it's these corporations.
Absolutely. And they are
that's
making
the problem.
What they're making, bizank.
Right.
Yes. They're making bank.
How do you make $21 million in a month?
And then you don't want to pay people an adequate minimum wage. And you don't want to give them health benefits.
Nothing. Yeah, that's true.
State of Texas, no Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
Is that not ridiculous? Do you know how many uninsured people live in the state of Texas?
Yeah.
We could talk for a while.
With that in mind, ladies. With that,
I know. Goodness.
No, I know. But we want to hit it. So I would be remiss if I didn't look at some of these comments. We have Stacy who says, I would like to see a partnership between these real estate developers getting a tax break to help build a Whole Foods in District D. Candace Joseph, the food, people are talking about the food deserts. So District D finally was able to get the big new HEB in there. Are there any other things, or like Stacy says, on the horizon, maybe to bring other types of
other
nice
food
places?
Chains.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's very hard to attract food chains when you have a lot of crime.
Right.
And that's, that's the truth.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. I have somewhat of a solution that I am so excited about.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am into getting a partnership with the Houston Food Bank, where we can have a satellite food bank in in the District
That's
D,
good.
The
okay.
District of Destination. And, I participated in so many people coming through the line, getting these boxes of food. You open those boxes, it's like, I ain't gonna eat that.
Right.
So you would throw a lot of food away.
And how much peanut butter can you eat?
Oh, I mean, God. Well, peanut butter was something that people like.
Yeah.
But you might have something in there. It was like, you don't even recognize what
lima beans.
And I commend the food bank. Don't
That's
get
right.
me wrong.
That's right.
They brought us through a tremendous
during that
crisis.
Pandemic. That's right.
And, you know, That's and right. if you're so That's inclined, right. maybe you need to donate to the food bank because they really have served this community well. But what I'm trying to do in this particular area in District D, this would allow people to actually go in and get their food.
Yes.
They could
yes.
choose what they wanted.
Exactly. Right.
For free.
Yes.
For free.
Right.
They could, if they wanted ground beef, they go get their ground beef.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm sure we would have to put some limits or whatever, but certainly give them an opportunity because we have a transportation issue
yes.
getting all the way to the food bank.
Right.
So why not move the food bank to one of the most depressed areas in the city?
That's
and
right.
I've identified the building and working with a realtor to try to negotiate and looking for some partners, because that's one of the real big things that I'd like to do in my next term, if God is willing.
Well, let me ask you this. With that in mind, we have a comment. Lloyd says,
Addicts
Middle School. Let's see what Lloyd says. Lloyd says, Addicts Middle School. I need some glasses. Lloyd says,
and
Addicts Middle School didn't have a library for 10 years and no one said a word. We didn't have a library for at least the 8 that I was at the school I came from.
I am so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I was one of the people that contributed to Addicts.
Okay.
Getting
okay.
their library. Gary okay. Monroe led the
okay.
charge. Jolanda Jones was involved and I was involved.
Okay.
So you are so absolutely correct, Lloyd. But I was there. I gave
yeah.
financial contributions, as well as some of my Jack Yates friends and people
right.
in the community. We came and we heard the call of them not having the library books. Not
yeah.
only was it Addicts, but it was also Yates.
How do schools
and
lose
it was
libraries?
Cullen. And it was Cullen.
How do they lose
Yates,
libraries?
Addicts, Cullen.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you lose librarians. And
oh,
once you lose librarians,
wow. yeah.
then, you know, in
yeah.
fact, I participated yeah. at Cullen Middle School with a tutorial
okay.
through the NAACP Houston branch. I would go over there during the day and work with students for them to, and it was actually in the library,
mm-hmm.
but there was nobody around in the
right.
library.
But
That's it was
right.
Gary Monroe,
right.
God rest his soul,
uh-huh.
that brought it to everybody's attention. It was Jolanda Jones.
Right.
I was there. I wasn't elected then, but I was there, I guess, being a part of the NAACP
yes.
Houston branch.
Yes.
And then so, and we got our money together and put it in and donated for them to reestablish those three campuses with libraries.
Well, Arian McCary says we need quality grocery stores in our areas. And she's
we
absolutely
certainly do.
Right.
I do not deny
right.
that.
Yes.
Certainly, you know, in talking to a lot of them,
yeah.
if we could get our crime under control, then,
ooh,
and God
that's the
knows.
Age old that's the age
oh
old question.
God, oh my God. And I'm gonna tell you,
world.
I'm one that has I put in a lot of money from the Council District Service Funds to try to deal with crime. I put money into the Southeast,
yeah.
money into the South Central, got ATVs, sound meters, call boxes, because they had a lot of stuff going on at the Columbia Tap.
Right.
And then
yeah.
we were gonna install
yeah.
it
yeah.
over at Sunnyside Park.
Right.
But more importantly, I don't just deal with throwing money at a problem.
Right.
I'm also engaged with a gang intervention program.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody knows
Getting
this
to the
wonderful,
root of the
wonderful
problem.
Person, Reginald OG1 Gordon.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
he is, you know, awesome. You know, the funny thing, he would always have this engagement every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always make a donation, but he would put a mirror. No, he'd have a casket.
Okay.
And he'd let the kids, it would be at the funeral home.
Right.
And the kids would go by and he would talk to them about not ending up in the casket.
Right, right.
Well, I gave him the idea. I said, put a mirror in it.
Yeah.
I say so that when yeah. they go and they look down in that
they
casket,
see themselves.
They
yes.
would see themselves.
Right.
And that was pretty effective. But what I did, there was a old Sunnyside Reed Road substation. And
yeah,
it was
that's
right
by
there.
My parents' house.
Yeah, it was right there on Reed Road. And now it was closed.
Okay.
And so now
it's right by the library.
I engaged
yeah.
with, yes. I engaged with Chief Finner.
Right.
And Chief Finner has allowed OG1 to actually, because, you know, it's important to have a stationary place.
Right.
You know, so when you tell them that you're going to meet at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, you don't have to wonder if
you
the building
have somewhere
is going
to meet.
Be
there. Yeah.
And right. So, you know, we work through some kinks. And so they allow him, they open the building for him and the, you know, the guys that are at
right.
risk.
Right.
Or right. former gang members to come because they need some intervention. Help them to move maybe into some trades or some things to help them to get their GED.
That's what I was getting ready to say. City Councilman, I feel like one of the big issues we have with crime, when people don't have sufficient funds and they don't have jobs and they don't have opportunities,
absolutely.
That's part of
the problem.
The yeah. problem.
Yeah.
And I feel like in Houston, because Houston is so big, 2,100 families move here a month.
Right.
And I feel like because that's been the issue, is that a lot of, and then on top of, which is another soapbox that we could probably all get on later on off camera, but when you are graduating children who are not prepared to fend for themselves. That's
right.
an issue.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So that's why I feel like the crime rate is so ridiculous.
Right.
Well, people that are gainfully employed are not sitting in your house cooking breakfast while you're at work.
That's right. true.
You know,
that's
they're
true.
Not looking to hit you
that's
in
right.
the back of your head. So we have a responsibility to make sure our students either get a high school diploma or
yeah.
a GED, and then give them these vocational aptitude tests to determine what their interests are.
That's
and
true.
Then you can guide
That's
them
true.
To get to where they need to be. And if, again, if they like what they're doing. Oh, and by the way, Lloyd, I used to work at Addicts Middle School. I forgot to tell you that. I worked there for many years as well. I had that whole Sunnyside corridor. And so I'm really, really aware of what the challenges are in the area in Sunnyside, as well as Third
yes.
Ward.
Well, let me ask you this. There are some political and social pundits out there who argue that the degree in which the demographic of the city is changing, especially many in the communities within District D, that it's crucial to have representation that also reflects the growing Hispanic population. Do you think it's necessary to be a native Spanish speaker to represent the community effectively? And if not, have you met this challenge?
I do not think that you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of call myself a social worker kind of council member.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody has the same social needs. And so if you're meeting the needs of people, whether they know what you're saying or not,
right.
then they know that you care about them and they know that you're going to provide. In fact, there was a lady that was in dire straits for her rent.
Okay.
That lady didn't speak English. But guess
yes.
what? Guess what? I was able to reach out to a friend who
right.
who had a person who was willing to give money to people
right.
who needed their rental assistance.
Right. right.
She came. I don't know what she said, but I knew what tears meant.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I knew she was very happy
yes.
to receive that money.
Right.
And so, you know, my friend Preston Middleton was working with a lot of families. You know, Dr. Judith Craven,
right.
you know, she had money that she was willing to give. But I'm going to say love transcends language.
Absolutely.
But I do believe that you must communicate. So
right.
therefore, I do have someone that volunteers actually for me that has the ability
right.
to translate
yes.
and transcribe and whatever, because I always want to engage everyone.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
absolutely.
And what's happening, you know, people are thinking that because you're African-American, you only care about African-American.
Right.
Right.
They think if you live in Third Ward, you only care about Third Ward.
Oh, yeah.
And so I hear that all of the time. But the funny thing about it is I have probably done more significant work, especially through Complete Communities, in the Sunnyside area.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just telling you, that's where you live.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So Rebecca, to me, it's about meeting the needs
right.
of Sagemont all the way to Midtown.
Right.
And we have a diverse
and,
population.
And becoming more and more diverse
Absolutely.
Every day.
Now,
every day.
I can't say
every
at
day.
Some point, if the percentages go up, that, you know, that I don't need a staff,
yeah.
staff person.
Right.
I might need a staff person.
Right.
You know, may need to start you know, transcribing, letting people know how to call in.
Okay.
And, you know, but we kind of share resources around the horseshoe.
Right.
You know, if I really, really needed somebody to come and interpret, then I could reach out to somebody to come. If I can't put my hands on the two people that I know that could be very, very helpful.
Exactly. Now, Dr. Shabazz, if you could write a three-statement summary, three short statements on your vision for the future of District D.
Well,
what and why voters should entrust you with the future of their communities, what would those three key points be?
Well, you know, I call District D the District of Destination.
Okay.
But District D is also the District of Education.
Okay.
We have the University of Houston. We have Texas Southern University. We have the Houston Community College.
Yes.
And so what I would like to see would be a thriving hub for education, healthcare.
Yes.
Oh, technology, absolutely. You know, we have the ION, right? Mm-hmm. And culture.
And the medical centers in your district.
And the medical center.
I forgot about that. My goodness.
You know, and so there are so many things and so many resources.
I've used
the ION on several occasions to engage the community to come in for deed restriction workshops.
Right.
Those are the things that help us to preserve our historical piece.
Yeah.
That's what you asked about.
Yeah.
Filing the minimum lot size applications,
okay,
which keeps people from coming in, developers coming in, putting three and four buildings. I had that same situation in my own neighborhood. Actually, somebody wanted to start putting townhouses on the corner of Sawyer.
That's right.
And Arbor.
Oh,
and we had our deed restrictions together. Fortunately, we had somebody to work for the city in legal.
Yeah.
You know, but I also believe that what's going to have to happen, we need to change our form. When people apply for these permits, they need to have civic leaders sign off because you are living in that community.
Right.
And you know what's going on. And if you see something come up, you can call and say, wait a minute, you need to pull this permit. You need to look at it.
Yeah.
That helps to preserve. But anyway, that's one of the things. And so I want to also have quality of life through sustainable development.
Right.
And, you know, we talk about the affordable housing, which, you know, before I understood affordable housing, I was like, what are you calling? That's not affordable when you put it that way. But once you realize that there are ways and means to get in these particular units, then you realize, because I think everybody should have quality living.
I go back to children.
They need to be in a safe environment. And but I do realize that there are challenges as well. And the challenges are the taxes.
Yeah.
You know,
especially
you could tax the people out who, of course, the debt ratio determined that they could pay the note.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, until the legislature.
Yeah.
That I'm working with legislative teams to try to work with doing something, you're going to create gentrification because people can't pay this. And what about the surrounding communities that are also impacted by that new structure?
That's right.
So we can't just get people in. I mean, it's great. And I'm a real estate broker.
Right.
And of course, I haven't sold anything in quite some time because I don't really have the time. But just to see the light in somebody's eyes, that they are able to move into their own space or into a really nice complex.
That's right.
That's so heartwarming to me.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I don't want them to come back at the end of the month and say, end of the year and say, I can't stay here. I can't pay these taxes. But
what about the seniors in the community being able to stay in their homes?
I'm telling you, they need to look at all of that. I mean, seniors certainly get a cap.
Right.
On, you know, at least they get some kind of benefit. Right.
Yeah.
Right?
They're 65 too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about some of the younger families that are trying to build on their homes.
Yes.
You know, when I bought my house, it was $58,000.
Yeah.
You can't imagine what I could get for my house.
Kim was
now.
Just about that price when she got hers.
You know, when I bought it, I was able to get it for that. And I guess maybe that was high then.
Yeah.
You know, I was a school teacher.
Yeah.
Then, on a school teacher salary.
Right.
But I could say God provided, and I was able to, I never was late. On my house.
That's right.
My dad said he paid $17,500 for his house.
Oh, my God.
$17,500.
Well, that's what my parents paid. That's about what my parents paid. Who's home was right behind me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their home was right behind me. Yeah. We had backyard to backyard. In fact, we had a gate and it was really good.
My daddy said
it was really good for shopping. His mortgage. I could go over there. And eat dinner.
His mortgage was literally $97 a month.
That's how much my first car. That's how much my first car note was.
Stop.
I had a Volkswagen convertible, baby.
I said, daddy, wait.
You can't get a $97 car note.
You cannot.
Now.
Daddy,
you cannot.
$97.
Mine was actually 98, my first car note, right?
Rebecca, Dr. Shabazz. Now, I got to, we can go on all day with this, but let me ask you this. If constituents or people who are living in District D would like to reach out to you and contact your office with concerns or with ideas, how would they go about doing so?
If it's city related,
yes.
Call my office.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell people this, and I really want to get this messaging out.
Yes.
We have such a huge problem with dumping and illegal dumping.
All over the city. Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, I have one of the most successful hot teams in the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's four men, two trucks, two trailers.
Okay.
On Mondays, they go around and they pick up tires. And you cannot imagine how many tires.
They probably got a full truck.
You know, they get on Mondays, right? Then the remainder of the week, they respond to 311 calls. But I'm going to tell you, I'm just going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Calling 311 to me always felt like a black hole.
Yeah.
Okay. And because the city is engaged with the entire city.
Right.
So
right.
I said, wait a minute, I got to take ownership of this baby.
Yeah.
Of District D.
Right.
And so now we have what is called a two-step process.
Okay.
And we ask people, and I hope your listeners, if they're in District D,
right.
please know. Call 311.
Okay.
And they're going to give you a service request number.
Okay.
Because it's for tracking and actually to know exactly where the problem is.
Right.
You can hold on and ask to be transferred to District D. Or.
Didn't know that.
Or you can call 832-393-3001. And if you don't know the number, you can look on the City of Houston website.
Okay.
You call or you can email. And a good deal would also be to get the newsletter for District D.
Okay.
District D at HoustonTX.
Okay.
.gov and send that and you can get the newsletter.
Is there a website for District D?
Yeah, for District D is District D at HoustonTX.gov.
Okay.
It's an email.
Okay.
You send that to my staff and they will, you know, put you on the
newsletter.
On the newsletter. Okay. And then certainly if you have a SR number and you don't want to hold on to give it, then send it. And I really like the sending it to you people because it's documented.
Exactly.
And can't come back and say, council member, I sent this to you and you didn't respond.
Right.
You know, now the District D email is manned by my staff.
Okay.
I do have my own email.
Okay.
And some people, you know, send it there, but most of the time they'll relay it to me. So that to make sure that I get it. But I believe in documentation. I believe in being accountable.
Right.
And if you want to disturb me, you go from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet is to say that my staff did not respond.
Okay.
And I know human beings, there's some frailties and things sometimes happen, but that shouldn't be something that I'm hearing on a regular basis.
Right.
And so I just, and then to get back to, first and foremost, why change horses in the middle of the street? I mean, really, this horse is a workhorse.
Excuse me, I need to
I'm not a show horse. I'm a workhorse.
Okay.
Okay. I have what Gary Munro used to call receipts.
Okay.
I didn't leave the store and didn't pay the bill.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have things to show that what I have done.
Right.
You know, and I just believe that people can certainly put their confidence in me. We did a lot, especially 2 years with the pandemic.
Right.
Okay. Oh, and one thing I want to tell people if they don't know, because I had a conversation today because I'm trying to keep it going.
Yeah.
There's a ride program some people don't know about. It's RYDE. It's an app that people can actually download and they can ride free in Third Ward for free around.
Never heard of that.
I'm telling you,
That's
this word. But they're, I put in money.
Right.
To do this.
Yeah.
And I was actually partnered with a group that was able to get this electric vehicle. If you come to Third Ward, you'll see it. But now we're in jeopardy of not having the funding.
Okay.
And so what I did today, I actually had a meeting with Metro.
Okay.
Because I would love for Metro to pick up that particular engagement. It means people. We have had over 3,000 riders since Juneteenth.
Wow!
And people see me. I was riding in the walking in the TSU parade.
Right.
That's Shabazz. That's Shabazz. I like that program. I like ride.
Wow!
But you don't have to be a senior citizen.
Now, is it around a certain area?
It's like from the Gulf Freeway,
okay,
down to McGregor,
okay,
and then it's like Alameda area over by University of Houston.
Yeah, okay.
So you can get to HEB. Right. You can get to, you know, University of Houston, yes, has a medical facility.
Yes.
They also have an optometry clinic, right, that I used to go to as a kid. And so we're looking to try to expand it. It was a pilot program, but it has been a phenomenal success.
Wow.
Rather. And so I actually committed that I'm going to put more money into it just to maybe transition it to Metro.
Okay.
You know, because in Dallas, they have DART.
Yes.
You know, and they picked up the program.
That's awesome.
To be able, and if we have any people listening,
yeah,
who want to contribute to keep,
right,
this going, we would love some partnerships to come in.
Get in there and be
tremendous.
Be a catalyst in your own community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, now hang on one second. Go ahead, Rebecca, because
I know
we're gonna have to close it out.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That's what I was trying to say.
I know.
It goes so fast.
You know, because sometimes people think
you
are a certain way, and then maybe they can engage with you. I always kind of think if you know me, you love me. But, you know, that's not realistic. But at the same time, I think I'm a very warm person. I'm very caring.
Right.
I always speak from counsel about things that impact people's personal lives.
That's right.
You know, we do
and
the
policy.
And
that's what it's all about. Yeah.
And we do the ordinances. And all those do impact people. They do that. But at the same time, I want people to know that there's a resource maybe to get your rent.
Someone just had a great, and this is Candace Joseph said something about, how about a district D directory? That's neat. That's a neat
Well,
thought.
You know, I'm telling you, that's a great idea. Maybe you could reach out to somebody like Southeast Management.
Oh, okay.
Or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And they could put in resources,
wow,
of the different businesses that are in District D, and people could access them. And then sometimes maybe the businesses would pay into that.
Absolutely.
To advertise.
Absolutely.
So that would be a good thing.
So we're going to have to wrap up today.
Yes. I'm not going. Yes, don't yes. Let me go.
We're
going
to have to wrap
but,
up.
Listen, I'm going to have to pay extra because our producer is saying, wrap it up. But
I don't even see it. I see. Okay.
Here's the thing. If you would like to reach out to Dr. Shabazz, we'll make sure that we get her contact information in the chat. And we have so many comments. I'm going to try to go in and address all the comments. And if she wants to go in and answer some of these comments, that's great. But Dr. Shabazz, yes.
One last thing. You could call my office if
yes.
it's city related.
Mm-hmm.
If it's campaign related, you need to go on my website.
Okay.
CarolynForHouston.com.
Okay.
You
know, because I try not to mix the two.
Right.
I want to, you know, have a level
keep
playing field
separate.
For everybody and keep it separate.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Carolyn Shabazz, Rebecca, thank you guys so much for being here. And that's what it was about. I told you when you came on, I said, I want people to really kind of get to know who you are. Yeah. And that's what it's all about. Ladies and gentlemen, as we always say, Rebecca, every week,
we can do it.
We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
That was fabulous.